Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 15th of March 2015. My name's DRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View and Gareth James. Owing to a slight technical malfunction, my mic was still on during the first two reviews, and you can hear me breathing a bit. Sorry about that. We're now going to talk about Kill Me Now by Brad Fraser. This is on at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park, and features, well, the big names are probably people like Anna Wilson-Jones and Greg Wise, of course, although I think we're going to be mentioning Oliver Gomme quite a lot. Brad Fraser, I think there's been a musical production of his play Wolf Boy, which has been on in London, but he hasn't had too much on around here. I have seen a play of his before, which was Poor Superman, which is done in 1994 at the Hampstead Theatre, and featured Ian Gelder in, I think, the first thing I ever saw him in. Nick, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
So this is a play about a man who's had a chance, perhaps, of being a successful writer. He published one novel, but at that point, roughly the same time his wife died, he started spending all his time looking after his severely disabled son, Joey, who's played by Oliver Gomme, who you were mentioning. And this kind of takes us about 17 years on, where Joey's now a teenager and still needs a lot of almost pretty much full-time care from his father. But the main thrust of the story is that Jake, who's Greg Wise's character, starts to get a degenerative disease of his own, which really obviously changes the balance of their relationship and everything is kind of built around his life. So it sounds like a pretty bleak play, which at occasional moments it is, but it's actually presented a lot more as a black comedy, and it is very funny and kind of disarming in that way. Very nicely performed. It's directed by Brian Murray, who I think is a long-term collaborator of Brad Fraser's, so he obviously really sort of knows what the writer wants, and he's got kind of a good feel for the writer. And I'm surprised, actually, that given the conversations that people have been having around film and non-disabled actors playing disabled characters, I'm surprised there hasn't been more of a conversation about the same thing happening here. Oliver Gomme is very good in the role, but it is to be noted that he's not a disabled actor. He does give a very impressive performance, and it may simply be an issue of he does have actually quite a lot of dialogue, and I think it's probably quite important that some of the characters in the play don't necessarily understand him, but the audience do. So that might have been a consideration in the casting, but I do know one or two people who've kind of found it a bit frustrating that once again you've got a major character in a play who's severely disabled and they haven't found a disabled actor to play him. But overall, it's generally a very well-cast play as well. You've got, as you mentioned, Anna Wilson-Jones, who's playing quite an interesting character because she's someone who's had a very long-term, incredibly casual relationship with Jake. It's kind of a once-a-week sexual relationship because his life has been so dedicated to his son to the exclusion of any kind of circle of friends. She finds herself suddenly being a lot more important to him than she'd ever expected to. And it's interesting to kind of see, I think she does an interesting job of developing how this character becomes part of the family, sort of against her will. And you've also got Charlotte Harwood, who's playing Jake's sister, who's very good. And she has a lot of scenes with Jack McMullen, who plays Joey's best friend, who's slightly learning disabled. And he's kind of one of the main sort of comic influences on the play because he's kind of slightly learning disabled and crucially knows that he's slightly learning disabled. He feels incredibly liberated to just say anything that comes to mind. So he's kind of incredibly blunt, and there's a lot of comedy and there's a lot of kind of truth in the things he says. So yeah, I by the end, it's a pretty moving show, but it is surprisingly the overwhelming kind of feeling of it is how funny it is. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I too was slightly disappointed that Oliver Gomme wasn't disabled. That sounds rather unpleasant, really. I mean, it was a bit of a shock at the curtain call when he comes up and he just stands up and, you know, suddenly he's perfectly normal. And I was rather hoping that they would have got a disabled actor to do it, but it would have been something that was extremely difficult to do, especially if he were disabled in the same way that the character was. If you've got, I mean, it looked like something like some form of cerebral palsy to me, where your brain is working fine, but your body is just not cooperating. And it would be very difficult if you did have cerebral palsy to actually act, because you just wouldn't ever have proper control over what your body was doing, and you couldn't therefore control your body in the right, or appear not to have control of your body in the right places. So I can understand why they probably can't do it, and they probably can't get away with doing it. But it is something of a pity. But yeah, I was surprised how much I enjoyed this play and liked it. I wasn't really looking forward to going to it, but I keep missing things at the Park Theatre, and I thought I ought to give it a go, and possibly because I wanted to see Greg Wise on stage again, and I hadn't really thought about it being by Brad Fraser, who I've seen before, because I saw Poor Superman 20 years ago and was quite impressed by it at the time. There was a particular scene, which I won't talk about, that was particularly memorable about that play, but I did enjoy this play. I mean, enjoy is a bit difficult, because it does tell a fairly tragic story, but as you said, it tells it with a lot of humour and a lot of lightness. And yes, I enjoyed it. I mean, the only slight problem I'd have perhaps was with Jack McMullen's character of Rowdy. I thought that perhaps you didn't really get the impression that there was anything wrong with him, and I don't know whether that's the writing or the direction or what it was, but he is very self-aware. He knows, you know, he kind of knows what's wrong with him, and he's learned to play it and learned to play out with it, and that's perhaps what we're supposed to see there. But it didn't quite ring entirely true. But the rest of it, it's very well acted and a very interesting piece of work, and certainly it made me want to go back and see if I can see more Brad Fraser in the future. We're now going to talk about Peddling at the Arcola Theatre. This is a play written and starring Harry Melling, who has become, possibly for me, certainly, the best actor, child actor, to come out of the Harry Potter franchise, and rather a surprising actor, because he played Fat Dudley Dursley and didn't look very promising, except when you noticed in the last film, or the last couple of films, where he suddenly appeared to be wearing a fat suit. He slimmed down an awful lot, and I don't know that that made him a better actor necessarily, but it made him a more attractive actor, I suppose, and enabled him to do a wider range of work and become the star. And he's done an awful lot of plays on the fringe, places like Southwark Playhouse, where he was in I Am a Camera, and also he did a very interesting, I think it was a Christopher Hampton play, When Did You Last See My Mother, at the Trafalgar Studios. And he's become somebody who I will actively seek out when he's doing things on stage, because he is, as I say, I think he is the best of the child actors, and he is a very strong presence. And this is a short play that he wrote, I think, for the High Tide Festival, where he plays a peddler, somebody who goes on the streets knocking on doors and tries to sell you household cleaning utensils, brushes and dishcloths and stuff like that. They are around a bit, but I haven't seen them around for a while, but certainly I think they still exist. And they're usually people, or at least they appear to be, ex-young offenders or people in some kind of rehab, or even in some cases ex-soldiers. And it's always something you feel guilty about when these people knock on your door, especially if you don't want anything or you don't feel like helping them. And we see this sort of young man who's clearly confused, takes a bit too many, perhaps drinks a bit too much, and is basically living rough until he's sort of picked up by his handler and taken round the houses with his tray of goods. And in one encounter, he discovers somebody who he used to know, who was back in the day his social worker, and he discovers a history and keeps returning to the house, and we develop more of a story and more of his background and what his life was like before this. We slowly gather more of his story, and we find out that, you know, he's this semi-homeless person who has been left behind by the social welfare system, and there's nothing for him in the world, and he struggles with that, and his only pleasure seems to come from, well, playing with fireworks, which is sort of the only thing he wants to get money for. It's a monologue that Harry Melling does with extreme physicality and constantly taking his clothes off and putting them back on again and things like that.
I was impressed by it, but it's just you could poke holes in it and find lots of problems with the plotting of it if you wanted to be vicious. But I enjoyed it for what it was, which I would tend to say was the kind of thing you see at a theatre festival, you know, something an hour long, an interesting monologue telling an interesting story. I don't think I'd go much more than that. Nick, what did you think about it?
I agree that it's kind of easy to poke holes into. I mean, maybe it's kind of quite a canny choice of sort of the style that he's written it in, but I do find it hard to care about any kind of inconsistencies and things, because it does have this poetic, lyrical quality that I never kind of got the impression that I was meant to be taking it hugely literally. So I was never that bothered about the kind of inconsistencies and little plotting details that maybe didn't work. And I certainly think, I mean, I've seen a lot of monologues written by actors for themselves. And I think, obviously, they're always, to a certain extent, showcases. And certainly this does showcase the best of what Mellon can do as an actor. But I also found, it also felt to me like it had got a decent amount of kind of effort had gone into it. I think, you know, maybe it wasn't the most beautifully researched piece on earth, but it certainly had a lot of enthusiasm behind it. And I think a lot of work had gone into the writing of it and the style of it. And I did think it was very stylishly written. And I think you can't kind of underestimate as well, I think, what Stephen Atkinson, the director, and Lily Arnold, the designer, have done with it, because they've really kind of kicked it up a notch. I think I can see what you mean about it being something you'd see at a festival, but I think it's kind of the production that it's been given has kicked it up a little bit higher than that. And it just is very atmospheric. And it's got one of these sets that are, it's in the round, and it's one of these that separates the actor from the audience with sort of gauze. And sort of you get the impression that the way the lights are, that he can't actually see the audience at all unless he kind of squashes his face right up against the gauze. So this does lead to, there's one particular moment that I won't spoil that works very effectively. It was really interesting to me how it redefines the relationship between the performer and the audience. So I think, yeah, a very well written piece, a very well performed piece, but also I think really taken up to something well worth seeing by the production it's been given.
We're now going to talk about Antigone at the Barbican Theatre. This is one of two Antigones that have been on recently. In fact, they've overlapped quite a lot, although the other Antigone at the Theatre Royal Stratford East has recently closed. But we will be talking about that one as well. The Antigone at the Barbican is directed by Ivor van Hoe, who, of course, has done the acclaimed View from the Bridge, which is currently on the West End. They first produced that last year. The translation of this Antigone is being done by Anne Carson, and I'm burying the lead slightly. The star of it is Juliette Binoche, and she's accompanied by Patrick O'Kane as Creon, Kirsty Bushell as Ismene, and we have other people in the cast such as Finbar Lynch, Catherine Pogson, Samuel Edward Cook, Obi Abili, and Toby Gordon. Gareth, tell me more about this production and what you thought of it.
Well, I had big expectations of this because I did very much like his radical interpretation of A View from the Bridge. And I had actually seen his Medea, in Amsterdam, albeit in Dutch, in February. So I'd also seen a very good production of A Greek Tragedy from him. So I kind of went with my hopes quite high, really. But I left feeling hugely disappointed. And I think the main reason for that is that it didn't engage me emotionally at all. There's nothing wrong with the production. It actually is quite a conservative production. It's nothing like as radical as the other two productions of his I've seen recently. I thought it was unnecessarily slow. And I think the width of the Barbican stage, the time it takes to get people on and off, might be part of that. But the acid test for all Greek tragedy, I think, is whether it engages you emotionally. And this one didn't engage me emotionally at all. And I think part of that is also that Juliette Binoche has a very unemotional style of performance. It's set in front of a giant screen, and there are projections onto the screen at times. And there's a large kind of circle which is taken away to reveal a kind of sun-like circle right in the middle, and there's a sort of entrance in the middle at the bottom. And then on the stage, there's sort of modern furniture, really, sort of black sofas, and everybody's in dark clothing. The actors are mic'd, which I think actually adds a feeling of detachment from it, and perhaps it kind of exacerbates this lack of emotionality. And I just thought it was really very pedestrian. It just didn't engage me. It didn't engage me emotionally. And I've been struggling really to sort of understand why. And apart from the big, big stage and the miking and Binoche's somewhat unemotional performance, I'm kind of struggling to understand why, because Patrick O'Kane is very good as Creon. And I very much like Kirsty Bushell, who's Antigone's more compliant sister, Ismene, as you said. And indeed, Finbar Lynch, the Blind Prophet, was another performance I thought was very good. And even though they appeared more passionate than Juliette Binoche, somehow I was still looking at them as acting performances and not really getting involved in them as characters. So it was the second Antigone I'd seen, and we'll talk in a minute about the first one. And so perhaps, you know, perhaps because the other one I had enjoyed much more, perhaps this kind of added to the disappointment, but I certainly left the Barbican feeling, not robbed, but feeling disappointed, really, and dissatisfied, I think.
I had, of course, neglected to book this production for quite some time, and I didn't get a ticket until the last moment, and I was up in the gods, almost as far back and to the left as you possibly could be, and high up as well. So I think I was quite grateful for the miking of everybody, because you could hear them clearly, and I don't think I would have been able to hear over the rustling of the sweets packets from the people in front of me if they hadn't been mic'd. But I would agree with you, there was this feeling that, yeah, it wasn't as emotionally engaging enough. I personally at the time blamed the script. I didn't think it went for the heights. I've seen people very keen on the script and the translation online. They talk about it as if it is a really good translation. I thought it didn't quite get to the heights and somehow underplayed some of the emotional bits, and wasn't jarring so much, but there were one or two bits where you said, well, that could have been done more poetically, and it might have had more power if it had been done more poetically. I enjoyed almost all the performances. I mean, I've seen Juliette Binoche, I think, a couple of times before, and she's been more emotional in those things, and I didn't think she was that cold in this, but I think the biggest problem I had with it, and it happened with her and with Patrick O'Kane, was the shouting at some points to express emotion. They suddenly just start shouting. It's almost like it's on and off. It wasn't earned as either. It was noise for noise's sake almost. And it really pushed me away in those moments, because I felt that you could have done that with more power, and you felt that they don't really understand what they're doing. But of course, you know, Patrick O'Kane knows what he's doing, and Juliette Binoche can speak English perfectly well, can emote in English. And it was just a very odd choice, I thought, to get them to suddenly burst out shouting like that. And it really, that I think spoiled it more than anything else. As you say, it is a very well put together and designed piece. The set was very impressive, although I didn't get the full benefit of it sitting where I was. But I would have liked, you know, a slightly more powerful in terms of the script, and also earning the shouts, you know, building up to a crescendo in the shouts if you have to shout, which they shouldn't really have had to. And a slight other thing was the immense confusion I had about the actors at times, because they double the characters with people who are in the chorus. Sometimes you're not entirely sure, especially when you're dealing with Kirsty Bushell's Ismene and Hymon. When you're dealing with Hymon, and also, for that matter, with Eurydice, who are Creon's son and wife, you weren't sure when they were being the chorus and when they were being their parts, so you did lose out a little bit with that. He certainly can do it well. I think if they had done it in slightly smaller space, or if I was slightly closer to the stage, I would have enjoyed it more. But I think it was too big for this particular production. I mean, somewhere like the Young Vic, it might have done extremely well.
Yeah, I was actually sitting in the fourth row of the store, so I was actually quite close, but it still didn't engage me there. But there you go. I think it might remain as a bit of a mystery, really.
We'll move on to the other Antigone that's been on. This is Pilot Theatre's version of Antigone, with a translation or a contemporary version done by Roy Williams, and it's directed by Marcus Roma. This has been on at the Theatre Royal Stratford East, and has a largely black cast. I mean, they're not entirely, it's not an all black cast, but I think that they're certainly focusing on them. And in this, Antigone is played by Savannah Gordon-Lilbert, and Creon is Mark Monero. And something that Roy Williams does quite a lot is he's given it a contemporary twist. So you get the idea that it's more like this is a financial or a gangster empire centering around a club, and Thebes becomes a locality of London split into a new Thebes and an old Thebes. And at the same time, although they are this idea of having the gangsters, there's also the idea that the police are around, but they very much are governing themselves, which felt slightly odd. Although, when they talk about the gods, they look up at security cameras, which are dotted around the place, which says to them that somebody out there is in rather distant control. I do have a slight problem, as I think I've said before, with this idea when you take something contemporary or near contemporary and you just make it, you know, gangsterish or post-apocalyptic. And I did feel that this the idea that was behind this was a slightly post-apocalyptic London, which is sort of is nominally in charge, you know, of a national government who can come down heavily on you, but are more or less allowing fiefdoms to appear, or even indeed thiefdoms to appear and be governed by kings and sort of gangster warlords, which is what the slight idea of what you get. It doesn't entirely work, and I think that sometimes the feeling of trying to squeeze it in didn't do this translation justice, because it is like a lot of Roy Williams stuff is always very powerful, and he gets an awful lot of it right, and you do feel the story is very well told in this version and very emotional and very stirring. I think he slightly brings, I mean, I don't know to what extent he brings Creon to the fore, but you do feel that it is much more of a battle between Creon and Antigone, although I think in the other production we talked about, that was the same too, and perhaps I've just been misreading my Antigones in the past and not really paying enough attention to Creon, because Mark Monero is very powerful in this. And it's really the idea that this is brought on not necessarily by her impetuous act, but by his intransigence and his foolishness, which I felt much more in this than I did in the Antigone, but perhaps that's because this production drew me in a lot more. Gareth, what did you think about it?
Well, I thought this was very, very successful, and I think the reason could be that Roy Williams is a contemporary playwright rather than an adapter. I don't think he's adapted anything else, he might have done. But, I mean, we know him best for his original work. And I think because of that, he's approached it as a playwright, and he's taken the source, and he's produced a contemporary play based on Antigone. And I think it really works. And I think the reason it works is because the gangland setting, and if you think about it, gangs have a kind of military precision. There's a great familial loyalty. They have this obsessive aversion to disrespect, and they have a commitment to revenge. You know, they revenge if someone in their gang is dealt a blow, they will revenge it. And I think that's kind of Greek tragedy all over, frankly. So I think it kind of fits Antigone extremely well. And I think if you did a bit more tinkering and, you know, pretend and did it as a modern play, it could in fact be a modern contemporary play. And I think it works very well in that adaptation. And I just thought it had lots of passion, lots of energy, and I did engage with it emotionally. And as you say, I mean, Creo, who's now the gangland boss, who is extremely well played by Mark Monero and with great presence, I think. And he is, I think, more of a focal point than Patrick O'Kane, although the last Antigone we saw at the National, which had Christopher Eccleston as Creo, he also, I think, came to the fore in that. So I think that it was, in a way, it was similarly handled to that, which was also a modern spin on it. And I thought that the kind of Romeo and Juliet spin on Tig, as Antigone's called here, and Creo's son, who's now become Aemon, I thought was extremely good. And I just thought it engaged me all the time. It had lots of energy about it. There was a great brooding kind of soundscape by Sandy Nutkins, which I thought added a lot to it. And this kind of urban space under some sort of highway with unfinished concrete pillars and wire gates kind of gave it a great atmosphere, really. And all of the performances very good. I mean, Creo's wife is very, very well played, I think, by Doreen Blackstock. You know, a very determined and ultimately very defiant wife who's Eunice in this production. And the two lovers, as you say, were extremely well played. And this time, Tyrese was doubled up with the soldier, Oliver Wilson. I mean, he came on so differently as Tyrese. I didn't actually realise he played another part in the play. I thought it was another actor. But I just thought it was a great updating, and it had a lot of contemporary relevance about it. And on the night I went, you know, the Stratford, it was a local Stratford audience, you know, which is quite lively as an audience. And they really lapped it up, and I lapped it up as well. And to me, the two shows are poles apart, and this one was the winner for me, because it was in a way truer to Greek tragedy, I think, despite the sort of the contemporary setting. So, you know, I think well done to Pilot Theatre. I think it might still be touring it. I don't know whether this was the end of the tour or in the middle of the tour, but it started out in Derby, so it might be worth looking at to see if it's elsewhere.
Yeah, they filmed it, so it might actually be available online, and it might be best to check the Pilot Theatre website.
Yeah, I think they streamed it on Saturday.
Yeah. I don't know if it will be available after that. Yeah. There's all sorts of rights issues going on.
But if that is the case, then I would absolutely recommend trying to see it online, because I think it's well worth it. Well worth it indeed.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast will also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.